So, you want to be a contractor. Ever wonder what it takes to become a contractor? The journey they go on to get where they are now, or the crazy things they see and hear on the job site. Well, you're in the right spot. Welcome to So You Want to Be a Contractor, the podcast. Join your host, Mike Fisher, as he talks to owners of construction companies from all over about how they got started, how they run their business, and some of the craziest stories they've experienced on their job sites. And now, your host, Mike Fisher.
Welcome to So You Want to Be a Contractor. This is episode number 43. My name is Mike Fisher. My co-host over there, Maricela Arechiga. How are you doing, Maricela?
I'm doing great. It is Thanksgiving week, not to try and date us, but I am ready for some food and some sleep.
Yep. Food and time off, yeah. Time off. Quote, unquote, time off. Yeah, because I'm sure you'll be doing some estimating and planning and
doing a little bit of catch up. But I also have three sons, so like however much I want to actually do other things, you know, they're all over me. So
there you go.
I'll be resting as much as I can.
Our guest today is Nate Griffin. Nate is the president of Exco Design Build and also a coach at Winrate Consulting. If you haven't seen them online, I'm sure you will soon after this because they are all over the place. So welcome, Nate. How you doing, man? Good to see you.
I'm pretty good. I'm excited to be here and happy to be on the podcast. I know we had to reschedule due to me having a kid. And
ooh, that's congratulations. Right.
Congratulations.
Yeah, baby is like weeks old at this point, right?
She is 6 weeks tomorrow.
Wow. She is 6 weeks tomorrow. Ooh, you are in it, my friend. You are in it. Do you know what day it is?
So he wasn't just blown us off. Like he wasn't just an excuse. He actually had a kid, huh? Yeah. All
right. He wasn't like one of those other contractors.
Right.
Nate, do you know what day it is? Do you know where you are in the world?
Do I know what?
I said, do you know where you are? I mean, with the baby that's 6 weeks old, I remember being that far out. I didn't know what day it was. I didn't know where I was. I didn't know if I had taken a shower.
No, we're doing pretty good with that. So we had some in-laws stay with us. My wife's grandparents stayed, and they're like, her grandpa's a retired pediatrician, and my grandma's a retired lactation consultant. So they live with us a week.
Wait, you said her grandmother's a lactation consultant or retired lactation?
Oh, my God.
She's a nurse / lactation consultant, retired. And so they were so excited to come live with us and help us out for a week. So that first week home, they let me sleep all night every night. So I caught fully up within like a few days.
Hero. They are heroes.
So that was cool. Grandma would keep the baby in the living room and just wake my wife up, you know, to feed the baby and stuff. And they let me sleep all night. So I caught up quick. And then other than that, it's been good. She only wakes up once a night right now. And even though she's staying in her room, I can pretty much sleep through it.
Oh, so good for you.
My wife gets up, puts her back down, and she does good.
Listen, so, those grandparents should be for hire.
I do know where I'm at, but I understand that a lot of people are not as fortunate and super fatigued out by this point in the process. My wife's more exhausted than I am because feeding a baby is a full-time job.
Yep.
It is a full-time job. Kudos.
I had a hero of a wife also. She never listens to the podcast. She won't overhear this, me propping her up. But her thought process was like, because you hear of those, we're doing like family consulting now and doing some family therapy here. But like you hear those couples, especially like first baby, where like the wife is like, well, if I got to be awake, you got to be awake, right? Like this is a team thing. Her thought process was like, I'm feeding the baby. There's not much you can do. Like, why do I need to wake you up? I'd rather be able to pass the baby off to you in the middle of the day because you had a great night's sleep when I needed to take a break and take a rest. And I was like, hero.
Yep. Teamwork.
So we did it.
Teamwork, hero.
Yesterday was my first event taking care of her in the day. So she stayed with me about 6 hours yesterday.
Awesome.
While mom went and ran errands and had her day. She went on a girl's date or whatever. And I took care of the baby. So
Nate, is this your first baby? And I'm gonna transition us into some more construction talk, but is this your first?
This is.
So you've had a business. Tell us a little bit about your business because I'd love to get, we haven't had a guest on who's talked about the transition from fatherhood into, you know, maintaining a business and what that dynamic has been like. I'd love for you to offer some texture to that, but tell us a little bit about what you do.
Yes, I own a company called Exco Design Build. We're a design build contractor. So, you know, we do the plans here in North Carolina. We don't have to have them stand by an architect. So most residential plans, we just whip out in-house. I have a couple of designers that do that. And then I have a couple of project managers. And we are basically at this point, we just manage the projects and we sub out the entire process. But we take the client from, you know, start to finish and try to provide that like handholding luxury experience for them.
Yeah. How long have you been in business, Nate?
8 years.
You've been in business for 8 years. Yeah. So you started when you were 15 because you look like a whopping 21-year-old.
I was going to say, I was going to say 12, but yeah.
When did you start? You're 30. Thank God for
good genes.
Did you have
a history?
I started that business when I was 25.
Did you have any history in construction before that?
Yeah, so my dad's an electrical contractor. So I grew up going to the job site. He went out on his own when I was like 8 or 9. And I started going to the job sites with him and being a wire monkey, putting in receptacles, whatever basic task he would let me do. So by the time I was like 14, I was working full time in the summers with him and learning the electrical trade. But even on those job sites, you know, I love to just watch all the trades and kind of absorb the process of how other trades were working amongst each other, like the plumbers, the HVAC guys. Mostly the rough end part was where dad took me to the job site because I couldn't break things probably. But that's kind of where I got my exposure to construction, was going to job sites with dad.
And then what was the impetus to starting your own business?
Yeah.
What was the
at 25?
What was the transition or the push there?
Yeah. So, I've always loved like being my own boss, kind of that free spirit. I have a master's degree in chemistry from Carolina.
Jesus,
a lot of cool jobs.
I feel so underachieved right now.
some masters in chemistry. Tell me why? Where'd you go? What were you going to be, a rocket scientist? What were you going to do?
No, I actually worked for the Bureau for a while doing my forensic science research. That's kind of what I was into, but it didn't pay. So it just, I don't know, like no relocation. So that was like 2012 coming out with my master's degree, and places wanted to pay like $40,000 with no relocation expenses for someone with a master's degree. And that just didn't make financial sense when people working in the call center were making $35,000.
Yeah.
And so I was like, you know what? I'm not coming. I'm going to go figure something else out. So I went back and just started taking odd jobs. I worked with my dad. I worked doing odd jobs for this financial services company. I worked night shift as a janitor. I just did whatever because I was like, I can make more than $35,000 to $40,000. I'm going to figure this out.
Mm-hmm.
And then my first business jump was I was playing guitar for a church band and started a coffee shop with a guy. And that was my first like real foray into entrepreneurship, was starting a coffee shop or coffee roasting business, which became a coffee shop. And it's still going. We're 9 years into that business now.
Oh, hold on. So you've opened up multiple businesses at this point.
Yeah. So I have a coffee shop with two locations and a coffee roasting facility. So we do quite a bit of coffee, and I like our retail spaces. I like going and hanging out. So earlier you said this is going to be just like hanging out at a coffee shop. I was like, we could do that.
There you go.
I know about that.
Is there any of that chemistry background that's helping in the coffee business? Or is it completely irrelevant?
I could say it does. I mean, there's a lot of chemistry behind it, but it's all like relearning. I think my master's degree and my college education as a whole, even though it doesn't directly correlate into like anything I do today, it taught me how to learn. It gave me a lot of connections and really helped me build a lot of self-confidence. Yeah, so like, you know, when I worked at the FBI, like that was a big confidence booster, and like, I can do this shit.
Yeah.
Having a top secret clearance was cool and all that. So going to base every day and just being one of those people and hanging out with FBI agents was definitely like a huge confidence boost coming out of like my college education.
Awesome. So you have two coffee houses. You are the president at XCO Design Build, and then there's a win rate thing that we got going on. Can you, and you have a 6-week goal baby. So let's bring some of that into play here. How are you doing all of this? Where's your first
love? Let's leave it all together. So, January 2021, I joined the Champion Circle with Mike Claudio at Win Rate Consulting. So I became client first because my business was my construction business by that point. It was like net profit 4% after paying myself, and I'd stagnated at like that 800,000 to 1.2 million revenue mark. And I just really wasn't sure how to, you know, build the right systems. What I didn't know what that next step was. Like, I had a lot of ideas.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, I had a lot of field crew, and I knew I wanted to help more in the high-end new home building environment here in Western North Carolina. And it just, the margins weren't there running my own crew because my crew couldn't just, they couldn't get the quality right. And then I was having to go train, you know, 20 to 25 year olds every day and teach them how to do the job. And I burn out on that. So I hired Mike, worked with him like a year. After that first year, my net profit margin was like 14.2% for 2021.
Jeez.
And I did like 3.6 million in sales.
Damn. What was the big lever that you pulled? What was the big lever that you turned outside? I mean, the coaching is a big deal. And we've talked about that, Mike, in a couple of different podcasts here, is the value of a consultant, a coach coming in and speaking with no bias about your business. What were some of the levers that you turned to get such an increase in your profit and then that the sale increase?
Well, Mike gave me permission to go all in on my already idea of going design build. Like, I really wanted to be that turnkey shop and focus on taking care of clients from like idea in their head to hand them the keys to their dream home. And so like, I already wanted to do that, but I was hesitating on that. And I knew I needed to focus on like building subcontractor relationships and get rid of my in-house crew. And so by basically firing everybody except my project managers and designers, I reduced my overhead drastically, and that boosts profit margins because you start on new construction, you spread your risk out. So like when I was doing most of the work in-house, I was absorbing any risk. So if something went wrong, I ate all of it.
Right.
Versus if I sub out every little sub task and there's a little bit, like say it goes a little over on each one, cool. Each sub absorbs that piece. I don't take a hit at all. And so it really put me in control of the financial chart and where I was going and let me be able to deliver that quality experience for the client. So I went all in on subcontracting everything out and handling my part of the process. I'm going to hold the client's hand. We're going to do the vendor relationships, the subcontractor relationships, and we're going to turn the project from idea to finished project.
So you said he kind of gave you that. Yeah, he gave you that permission, quote unquote permission, right? What was holding you back? Yeah. What was it that kept you from doing it? And what did he say to?
Why did you need permission?
Yeah, I think, you know, some of my like local mentors in my marketplace, like there's a guy locally that a lot of people compare me to. He does everything in-house and he recommends to keep it that way for better quality control.
Mm-hmm. And it's true.
He's obviously doing something right, but. Right. All his in-house guys at this point are, you know, 40 plus years old. They've been with him for 15 years plus.
Oh, good guys.
He's got this well-established like basket of people. He's booked for like the next 5 years, cash only jobs. Like,
oh, come on.
He's built like a ridiculous business.
Listen, when the pot is done, send me his information so I can report him.
Yeah.
Hey, guys, like that.
Yeah. I thought I needed to be him instead of being me. And I think like, going after that too hard and trying to build these young guys that were just, you know, in, out, like my turnover was ridiculous. It was just putting me in like a holding place of just not making any money and burning myself out from, you know, at that time I was working 70, 80 hours a week, every week. There was one year I worked 365 days straight. I worked a half day Thanksgiving and a half day Christmas day. Because that's what it took to get through that year.
Yeah.
Well, and the great part about, so like you said, you wanted to be that guy, right? And you're trying to be that guy, but from a labor standpoint, just it didn't make sense. But the great part about the way you're doing it now, and in my mind, is you can do what you're doing now. And if you have subs that come up to you and be like, Nick, love the way you do your business. I'm real happy where I am. Got 15 years experience doing drywall. You know, you got any room for it? You can start bringing those trades in one by one. If you find those quality guys and that opportunity presents itself to be able to control that quality and have those guys, right? Because there is, well, you say you kind of lost or you gained an overhead, right? But there is an advantage to maintaining that payroll and controlling it and controlling the quality. Yeah. And because now you don't have to pay for the other guy's profit margin either, right? Because that sub's making a profit off you as well. Right. But so I think, even if you wanted to get there, I feel like you have a path now back to that place, but in a controlled manner where, you know, you can control the kind of labor that you're bringing on.
I think so for sure. I've talked to my guys about like over time, if we find guys and can pick up quality guys, that makes sense, but we're done being in the training business.
Right.
Like I need the guy who's like the pro.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
And then I don't have to worry about it because I don't have time to go babysit and fix every error and things like that. But I mean, I'm thankful for that journey because I've personally done all the trades at this point except HVAC.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, I know what it's supposed to look like. Like, I've laid block. My wife and I laid block. And we laid a whole garage, her and me mostly.
Yes.
And
go ahead, Marcel.
I need to know what your relationships with your subcontractors look like, because I think there's a lot of value in having a setup like yours where it's, you know, sub heavy. It's 100% sub executed with the project management being in-house. But can you give us some texture to what your relationships with your subs look like and how you go about looking and just keeping that pool of subcontractors fresh and talented?
Yeah. It is a never ending, like, almost, we're going to hire a junior project manager here soon whose job is just call subs.
Yeah.
Find me new subs, go visit new subs, visit job sites. So, like, one of the cool things about growing up in the industry in this specific, like, local market, because I moved back to my hometown, like, post-college and all the stuff I did, I moved back. And, you know, like, the plumber I use now, the guy running the show was the low man on the totem pole for his dad's company back when I was doing electrical work with my dad.
Mm-hmm.
So I used the same plumbing company that was on all the new construction job sites that my dad was on, because, like, I know the quality of work. I know they can get it done. I know they're not the cheapest, but there's a reason. Show up on time.
Yep.
And then, like, the HVAC guys, like, there's two or three HVAC guys I use that are guys I saw working and watched when I was going to job sites with my dad as a kid. So I think having that fundamental baseline, and my dad was my electrician for a while. I fired him this year. He's old and slow and doesn't call me back. He's late to the job and all the things I don't believe in. And I was like, Dad, you're retiring. Just quit doing electrical work. You're done. Just retire.
I love it.
And so,
I love it. That's amazing.
I pushed him to retirement this year.
That's a first. I fired my dad.
He's retiring this
year. I fired my dad. But Nate, I think that's super.
I was like, Dad, you know, you're 3 weeks behind on this job. I can't have it. You got to go. But that's kind of fundamentally that base of sub pool is like guys I've known forever.
Yeah, that's really impressive. And I think it's notable to suggest that you are going to hire a junior project manager whose biggest responsibility is to go look for talent, because it's never ending. Yes. That's really impressive.
Yeah, it has to happen. I mean, right now, the way to source subs is honestly, a lot of these like Facebook information pages for local communities.
Yeah, they're good, right?
People are always asking like, hey, I need my house painted. Do you know a painter? I don't ask the question. I look at the comments and try to source like guys I can call and go visit.
Yes.
I don't accept pictures as proof you know how to do your job, because who's going to send you a bad picture?
Yeah, right. No one.
Right.
No
and
one.
So like, I want to go visit you.
Better to go watch one of the jobs.
Yep.
The
company.
Yep.
Yeah. I want to see your core values. I want to stop in. So I stop in a lot of job sites just randomly still. If I see some guys that are killing it framing, I'll stop in and just have a conversation. Usually I know the GC in this area. So, or I'll call some of these other GCs and be like, hey, who framed that last house you built?
Mm-hmm.
Did you have any issues? Were they on time?
Yeah.
You know, things like that.
Nate, you
if,
said that
if you can't text me back, I'm not hiring you as my sub.
Yeah.
I've got a lot of little, like, if you can't be digitally friendly, you don't make the cut. Like, I had to fire my concrete guy because he's still old school. You have to call him. You have to leave him a voicemail. He'll call you back.
You fax over your invoices.
He'll bring a paper invoice only, handwritten. And so I just can't. I can't do it. It doesn't fit the brand and the model moving forward. So you have to go find other people.
Yeah. And Nate, you said that when you started working with your coach at WinRate, your net margin went up 10%, 10 points, right? Big levers that you pulled were you went all sub and you went design build. Those are the two big levers that you pulled. Yep. At a 14% margin with over $3 million business, that's a nice profit. And first, like, huge kudos that you know your numbers. Like, you know your margin rate, you know your profitability rate, and you obviously know how much is going in. But my question is, with that increase, have you found your sweet spot, or are you still growing?
So let's talk about that. you know, going forward that year, next spring, Mike invited me to be a coach on his staff and start teaching people because I love the financial side. Like, I'm crazy strong in finance. I love the stock market. I understand. I almost went to be an accountant in undergrad. I thought that was the track I wanted to go.
Well, I mean, you haven't done enough in your life, Nate. I feel like you probably should have because you're a little underachieving.
All over the place. FBI, chemistry, maybe I'll go be an accountant. But no, I am a general contractor. Coffee houses, plays in a band. Okay.
Don't anymore. That decision, though, to be a contractor was because of, like, the need in the community is because all the contractors in my area, other than the guys booked forever, were like, your jacklegs, no insurance, fly by night, draw their plans on a napkin kind of guys. And it was easy pickings for me to come in as an educated individual that could outcompete them because I can win on the client side. So when I went all,
I can win on the client side. I can win on the client side. Boom. Go ahead.
Love it.
Well, they can all build houses. Some of them are great, but I'm going to go get the client. So when I went all sub, it freed up my time. I wasn't on job sites babysitting anymore. And so I was free to go all in on go get the deals.
And show off your business, right? And be able to show off what you guys do, how you do it, and why it's better than, you know, somebody else.
But you were talking about
numbers. I
started
charging for the design too as a separate fee. And that's helped a lot.
That's excellent. But
go back to the finance part.
Highlight some of your finance. Highlight how you got there. Was that just always a part of the inception, since the inception of your business? Numbers, numbers, numbers.
Yeah. So at that volume, you know, I'd always wanted, like, I had that dream of doing $1 million. When I do $1 million, say I'd earn $1 million in a year, whatever. It's really not that awesome, I promise. And, you know, I set my target on, everybody told me, like, that 5 to 7 million is like the hard spot. So I was like, you know, let's go for like that 3 to 5 and just kind of build foundation for the next few years, focus on fewer new builds and kind of like keep a core team that I can get established and start building systems and processes to remove myself from the business. So now today I work less than 10 hours a week on my construction business for sure. And still have the revenue. I ended up promoting one of my guys from within to basically COO. Like, he's my operations guy running the machine. And so him and I meet every other week along with like my lead designer. And that's like my leadership team for my company right now. And they run the ship. There are clients I've seen in Lowe's Hardware that don't know my face at this point. Like, they don't know who I am. Because all they had with me was a phone call.
How far do you think you could get from a growth standpoint with this, under this model? And what would it take to go further?
I think as you keep systems and processes and build like a organizational chart and roles and responsibility, it's definitely like replicable. So I know like one designer can take care of two project managers' volume. And you can rinse and repeat that. And I know like one sales guy could sell enough for two project managers. That's each one managing about $2 million a year.
How many projects is that? Like, one sales guy can fill up two project managers' schedules. How many projects is he selling?
Easy. Now, most of our project sizes are in that $500,000 to $800,000 range right now.
Okay. Are those, and you're in North Carolina?
Yeah, I'm in North Carolina.
Is that a full home renovation or is that a ground up?
Probably like 350. Those are ground up.
Okay. So that one salesperson has to go out and find that one ground up. That, and that sales cycle, because your design build, that's like a, I mean, in Los Angeles, that's a 12-month sales cycle. Nearly, because we're, we
yeah,
we
so
have
my
permits
sales
and
cycles total are 12 to 16 months right now. For new construction. So we're like 30 to 60 days on the design side, depending on what they got going on. And we're, you know, streamlining that rapidly. But right now, my role, I don't have a sales guy. I am the sales guy still, but I bring in enough leads through my website and just referrals and stuff. I've started funneling them to my head designer, and he just does that initial consult instead of me and gets them in the design build program. Like, gets the design build contract.
So go to that. Let's touch on that a little bit from a lead generation standpoint, right? I mean, you got into this business without a lot of, the connections were more on the subcontractor side through your dad and the business and working with some of those other trades, but you go all in and you start your own design build. How do you find people that need to build brand new homes? Like where are you getting that? What does the marketing look like? What does the sales process look like?
Mm-hmm. Fair question. So my marketing is mostly terrible. I don't do a lot. Most of my marketing is referral. I'm getting better. Mike's on me about this lately. Early on when I started my construction business, like our first job was like painting a garage and parts of a house out of my 2002 Honda Accord. Like that was our first construction job.
Excellent.
In my company with my brother and I. So we were just rock and rolling. I only had a car. I could borrow my dad's truck if I needed it, but we're just going to go do construction because that's what we think is going to make us the most money and we love it. And so we did that. And the way I fund leads is my mom's a real estate broker and I have my real estate license too to like buy and flip
houses. Let's just throw that in there real quick. Hold on. Never mind.
Jesus.
Yeah. But because of that and growing up around all those real estate agents though, like I already had kind of like a network of people I could reach out to and tell, hey, I'm in business doing this. If you've got real estate punch lists that need done to get a house closed, I'll guarantee them done in 48 hours.
Brilliant.
And so I got all the calls.
Yeah. Well, and then a lot of those agents are connected to, you know, the investment type buyers, right? That are in, or developers, the smaller developers that are looking to buy a piece of land and develop and sell and flip. So I would imagine that's probably where all that kind of led to, right?
Yeah. So, you know, one of those real estate brokers brought me a repair deal that I ended up buying for my first flip. And so like I used my real estate brokers and that network. And then I started building like really good relationships with my vendors. So I buy most of my flooring from one local like mom and pop flooring shop. And they send me a ridiculous amount of new construction because they've got a good highway facing location. A lot of times when, you know, middle-aged couples are looking to build a house, for some reason they go look at flooring first. They have floor plans, but they're stopping by the flooring shop
Look at
flooring and tile and talk to them about, you know, custom showers and things. And when they ask like, hey, could you refer us to a contractor? That flooring company sends me a ton of leads because they know I can handle volume.
I want to applaud you on the way that you've used your network because I think overall in our industry-wide, we're like okay as general contractors. We're okay at making connections, but we're terrible at like utilizing a network and going one to two networks outside of our own for all of the reasons and for any of the reasons that obviously.
I can give you the number one reason.
Go ahead.
The number one reason is just because of the ego in this industry, right? It takes a lot to be able to give something to someone unconditionally in the hope that they give you something back.
Yeah.
Right. Like, and this industry in particular is so guarded and so protective of their revenue that it's hard for them. And it's not everybody, right? I mean, obviously the people that are doing it right and trusting people and having the faith in humanity and using the network are succeeding out there in the most cases. Right. But I mean, I see that as a huge, huge detriment in this industry for sure.
Yeah. The way that we aren't able to make those connections and share, there is enough for everyone to go around. 100%. And I think that has.
There's enough for the good ones.
There's enough for the good ones
in the industry. Yeah.
And dude, even the bad ones stay really busy. Sometimes the bad ones stay more busy than they should. But Nate, bravo on how you've utilized your experiences from childhood. You're both of your parents to today. I think that's really worth applauding. And that's different. That's really different.
Oh, thanks. To me, it's just normal. That's another thing.
It's how you do business. Yeah.
What I do.
What's life? Yeah. Let's get into, I know we're getting a little close on time and I want to touch on Win Rate Consulting and Mike. So who is Mike? Why do we trust him? Why are you involved in that? Like what, I mean, he's, and from what I can tell, there's business coaches out there, right? And then there's like, what Mike and Winery Consulting do, and you know, they're a little bit more out there and a little bit more kind of in your face than a lot, not in a bad way, yeah. right? But they're just, he's all over the place from a social media standpoint. So who is he? Where did he come from? Why do we trust him?
Yeah, so, you know, Mike built or helped as a salesman for a roofing company and a remodeling company, like blow some businesses up from, say, that $1 to $6 million range. So he's done that a couple of times. That's his experience. And he's like, he basically outgrew those two companies and realized that, you know, he just had a knack for sales. And so he decided he was going to go be a sales coach and teach people how to sell.
Yeah.
And so he started that in like 2018, 2019. And then I started following him. He started networking really good. So he got involved with Arte, Apex, all those things. I met him through Arte because I joined that too, trying to find wisdom to help grow my business. But one thing that separates Mike is like, Mike's the genuine real deal as far as like, he wants you to win as a person too. Mm-hmm. And I think like some of the approaches of fixing people as people instead of dialing in their business helps their business explode. 100%. So like if you make a leader a great leader and make him better, make his home life better and all that, make his physical person better, the people around him will pick up too in his business. Yeah. And so,
or he'll just, or that person will just care more about what they're doing, right? When they've, when all those other things are in order and taken care of and copacetic in the rest of their life. Yeah. They have time to care more about
Mike cares deeply about his clients. So like, that's one thing is like, he's real vulnerable. What you see on the internet is that's just who he is. So he's real, he's transparent. And, you know, that interested me because we've done a lot of deep dives about me as a person and realized like I started my coffee shop for my coffee shop business partner. Like that was his dream. I started my construction company because my adopted brother, it was his dream to work for a quality contracting company and, you know, start a contracting business. So that was his dream, really. I was just like, well, I know business. Let's go make some money. Uh-huh. And, you know, I was the finance guy, the back end guy. I could sell and things like that. But really, at the end of the day, it wasn't my passion. I didn't get into building because I love building. I got into building because my brother loved building. And I'm familiar with it because I've done it my whole life. And so through that, we realized like, I really like am passionate about helping people grow their business and be successful because I can help them, you know, understand the finances, handle that, help them grow as people, help them systematize and get their time back. You know, I went from working 70 to 80 hours a week to working, you know, 10 hours a week and then 10 hours a week of coaching. So my overall week workload is like a 20 hour work week. And I'm making, I don't know, 10 times what I was.
Yeah.
You know, 5 years ago.
And so and you don't have to wake up at night with the 6-week-old. Like, Nate, you are freaking winning.
Living the dream.
You are winning 10 hours on one business, 10 hours on another, and a baby that only wakes up once at night, who is only 6 weeks old. You won, dude.
Yeah.
Congrats. Take a bow.
So get into the consulting a little bit. How many, is it only contractors that you work with? Or how many, where are you, from a consulting standpoint, how many have you helped a lot? Like, what are you working with?
Yeah. So I have 8 clients right now this year. Wow. You know, I have one client we've added. He's a new builder in Wisconsin, and we've added net profit on his years over $600,000 just by fixing how he is pricing jobs on a rolling year on like the next 12 months. We'll make another $600K, which lets him go hire project managers to run the show so that he can step away and have more time to pursue his dreams that aren't as tied into building as he thought either.
Yep.
And so, you know, a lot of the guys are contractors. I think all my clients right now, no, they're not all contractors. I've got one client. He's a multi-business owner, owns like a gas station.
You know that life.
Vitamin store.
You know that life too.
Ice cream shop.
Nate, having had the experience that you have with construction and now dipping into this consulting world, what would you say is the number one glaring error that general contractors are making that's affecting their business in a very negative way?
I would say that 9 out of 10 contractors do not understand their financials at all. They don't understand clearly, you know, markup and margin, overhead. They don't properly calculate overhead. I think right now for me, and that I hit early on in the coaching process with clients, is we've got to understand your numbers, your financial situation, where you're at, where you're trying to go, and we can build a plan. But like, numbers don't lie. That's a real data set that we can make decisions on. And I think a lot of contractors are maybe really good at what they do because they were carpenters and they became general contractors, but they're not really very well experienced on the numbers side of running and operating a business.
Yeah. I want to just repeat what you just said. 9 out of 10 contractors don't know their numbers. And because they don't know their numbers, they're not estimating their projects appropriately. They don't know what their full loaded labor, you know, burden is going to be for their employees, for their subs, for their PM, whatever that is. And so they're losing on the project before they even get into demo. That's glaring.
Well, and understand too, like,
at least leaving a ton on the table.
And zoom out even further, right? Because knowing your numbers doesn't mean this job, I'm going to bid at X and it costs me this and it is what it is, right? Like knowing like what each trade costs you and what that labor rate is and what it looks like on a daily basis and what the fluctuations in material costs are going to do to your job and all those that, you know what I mean? Like it's not just the that overhead, like, well, I sell a million and it costs me 100,000, I make 200,000. Like that's not how it works, right? Like knowing every little granular piece of it is what's going to
Or something that's that
and then being look able at, to create accurate projections to make decisions. Yeah. So, you know, like a lot of guys just run out and buy a new truck because it's a tax write-off. And maybe that's not like a wise financial decision in the moment based on data. They make decisions on feeling.
Yeah. Right. Oh, we most certainly do. We are an emotional industry. Yeah. We are such an emotional industry and we're so illiterate in our finances. But it's also like, look, homeowners really hold contractors to a price. It's really impressive. And I think it goes back to the sales process where a homeowner feels like, oh, I went shopping for floors. So this whole construction should probably cost X. And they're holding contractor to that number. And it's a skill, in my opinion. It's a skill to be able to say, no, thank you. Good luck finding the general contractor that will do it for that. Because my numbers don't lie. The data is the data. Right. The numbers are the numbers are the numbers.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah, I've had that discussion on markup because I disclose what my markup is to my clients, like full transparency. And when they, one, if they have a problem with it, it's mostly a red flag to me that maybe they're not a good fit for my company because if they're worried about the money, they probably can't afford my services. And, or they're going to be nitpicky about other stuff along the way and nickel and dime me. And I don't want to participate in that culture. But I think you got to educate people that like my markup, just because you Googled and it says 10 and 10 or, you know, whatever, markup and margin and stuff is based on like real numbers, like the cost to actually operate your business. And if you're not running your business that way and you're just going 10 and 10, you've got no clue what you're making.
Yeah.
And so you got to dial that in and figure out the right markup, right margin.
Well, let's,
the financials to be
let's get into the rapid fire as we get it, get close to the end here. Cause I know this is Lisa's favorite part of the,
this is one podcast. Of my favorites. Listen, I've grown Mike and I'm kind of enjoying the whole process entirely now. Thank you very much. But, Nate, you know, one of the big reasons that Mike and I are doing and hosting this podcast and bringing on guests from all across the country who are GCs is to give a platform to people in our industry to put a face and a voice to guests who are doing it right. And that's number one. And number two, because I really appreciate podcasts that give me a resource, have me think about my business in a different way. So this last part of the episode is asking every guest the same 4 questions in hopes that anybody who's listening will draw from, Nate's doing that. Let me go check that out. I hadn't thought about that before. So it's the same 4 questions that I will ask you. The first question: what is the one resource that you cannot do your business without? And let's keep it limited to the construction business because you have like 8. But what's one resource that your construction business cannot do without?
My most valuable resource is my like project management team, the people. You know, I can't operate without being able to delegate to them.
How do you find those people? If you can make it a little bit more tangible in the way, because people, we're definitely in a people service industry. Is there something that you do to attract those people? Is it a, you know, Zip Recruiter, or is it just you go out and make sure you have great relationships with your subs and they want to come work for you? How do you attract that talent and then retain them?
Yeah, I think I attract talent by telling everyone I'm hiring and talk to all my vendors, and usually, you know, somebody will send me a referral. I've not spent any time with ZipRecruiter or anything, so most of my potential talent is coming in. Maybe they're just not happy where they are as a project manager, and they like my culture a little better, or, you know, they're just looking for a new start or a new career, and they get referred to me from, you know, the paint shop or, you know, wherever. I'm just telling everybody.
You tell everybody.
Like, hey, man, on my way out, if I'm picking up paint, hey, man, I'm hiring a project manager. If you know anyone, send them my way. And I just tell everybody that.
And it's worked.
And it's worked.
Yeah. So it's that mindset of always hiring, whether you meet somebody or not.
Yeah. Yeah. Mike, we had this conversation with one of our guests, I think like 2 months ago. And I realized that, yes, always be hiring, always be open to great talent. And I realized even on my own website, I didn't have a we're hiring option. And so I'm working on putting, like, are we hiring right now at the beginning of December when we're about to go into winter? Probably not. But if it's the right talent, if it's an incredible
Let me ask you this. Yeah, let me ask you this. If you found somebody that could replace that, let's say, I mean, not to be mean, but we all have a top and a bottom from an employee standpoint, right? Like there is an employee on top. There is an employee on the bottom. That's just life and reality. If you can take somebody and slot them, you've got 10 people. You can take somebody that just came, walked through the door, and they are now in your top three, and you could replace your number 10. You're going to do that, right? Yeah. Like, you need to do that. From a business standpoint, you have to do that. So
100%.
You may not need it because your 10 spots are full. But in reality, if you could replace your number 10 with somebody that goes into the top three or four, you have to do that as a business.
It's an easy, it's an easy decision.
I mean, an A player is always going to out earn and produce what they cost 100%.
You. Yes. Yep. Yes.
If not, they're not an A player.
Yes. Right. Yeah. Right. Good one. Second question. What's the best advice someone has given you?
Oh, that is so vague. I will go with, from a young age, my dad taught me that construction is very feast or famine, and to always store back money when it's feast season, like put money back for the famine season.
Yeah. You reap what
you
sow.
Do you know when the famine season is? Do you have you figured out that ebb and flow of your business?
Always putting back.
You're always putting away.
I'm always stacking back extra funds to be able to weather any storm. You know, keeping 6 months of operating expenditures stacked back so that, you know, that drawdown that is inevitably going to happen at some point happens. I'm ready. It doesn't matter to me.
Yeah,
my staff will be taken care
of. Yeah, so you're not going to go out and buy a truck because it's a good write-off. You have a plan. Yeah. Love that. Feast or famine. Third question. Is there a book or a podcast that you love that I should go out and read or Mike should go out and listen to?
Well, book or a podcast. I think for contractors, I think everybody should read the Profit First book or the Profit First for Contractors by Sean Van Dyke. One of the two. There's same book, but Sean rewrote it, kind of catered towards contractors. And I think learning principles of cash flow management is paramount in our business because we're a high cash flow business and a high cash flow out business. And a lot of people are unaware of how to manage that. Like handling deposits, like deposits are a liability. It's not income, but most contractors slap deposits in their income account and call it revenue, but it's not, it's a debt. I owe someone something for that money.
Right.
And so like, there's one that's misaccounted for all the time.
Right.
But that book covers that and how to manage your cash flow.
Profit First for Contractors. Legit. I haven't heard that one.
Are you not gonna drop Mike's podcast and give him a little shout out too?
I mean, actually, you should go listen to Mike's podcast, the Big Stud podcast, because I'm the co-host of the Ask Me Anything segment on Fridays. And so you can see me every Friday on the Ask Me Anything.
For all your clients who haven't seen your face, they can find you on that podcast too, right?
And the name of the podcast is Big Stud?
Yes, the Big Stud Podcast.
Okay.
I almost used that name, but it was already taken.
Big Stud Sales Podcast, but now we cover more than sales.
The Big Stud. All right. Last question. I mean, Nate, you're all over the place, and interestingly enough, the vibe that you give is very calm. Like, you have a new baby, you're married, you have multiple businesses, you're all the things. But I wonder if there's one habit that you have for yourself, that you do for yourself, that fills you up so that you can continue to pour from a full cup.
habit I do for myself. I mean, there's a handful of things for myself, but I'm a real like big advocate of a strong morning routine.
What does it look like?
So like part of my routine is, you know, I'm up at 5 every day, no matter what, 7 days a week. I'm going to have a pour over a cup of coffee after I take my dogs out. I'm going to come sit in my office chair. I'm going to write in my journal for a little bit and then meditate. And then, you know, I'm going to get some basic exercise done right after that. And then here soon, I bought a sauna for my house. I'm going to start adding sauna right after that for my morning routine to kind of just get my mind and be good for my body. So I think having a strong morning routine keeps me from getting lost in the weeds, especially when I'm writing things out in my journal, because it's easy to get lost in today, like a small loss today or some downside today, when the big picture of the last 6 months is like I'm heavily winning. And so,
good. Damn it. Say that one more time, please. Can you please just rewind and say that one more time?
Which part? I'm heavily winning.
Yeah. You're in the weeds.
Yeah, getting lost in those small losses is irrelevant.
I think it's important. People get lost in the weeds. You know, you take a small hit, you take a small loss, you get a small claims lawsuit or something, and you get lost in it in the moment. And it's journaling for me gives me a place to step back and reflect and realize that in the big picture, like the last 3 months, last 6 months, that, you know, I'm absolutely killing it. And a small loss today doesn't reflect on like my annual performance or who I am or anything like that. Because I think it's quick. It's easy for high performers to take small losses to heart as a personal attack when it's really just like stuff happens and things go wrong and it's okay.
Yes. So good.
Did you get so granular in your morning routine that you said a quarter cup of coffee after you walk your dogs?
No, I do a pour over cup of coffee.
Oh, I thought you said a quarter cup of coffee. I was like, man, you are. That's not real true. Exact.
But I only drink like half of it specifically. Like, I don't know why. I don't like my coffee super hot. It needs to be cooling down a little bit. But then when it gets too cool, I don't want it anymore. So there's like a sweet spot for me to drink my cup of coffee.
That's good stuff. And I Love think the that. Other impressive part Love. Is that you're up at 5 a.m. 7 days a week. That's discipline.
For years. I've done that for years.
That's discipline because you can't get me out of bed before 7 on a Saturday and Sunday. Don't come to my door. I'm asleep. That's great.
My wife's more of a 7:30.
Yeah. I'm up early Monday through Friday, but that's my gift to myself on Saturday and Sunday is a little bit of shut eye.
Understandable.
Nate, you gave me so many nuggets. Like you gave me so many nuggets. Thank you so much for sharing, for putting, you're definitely not an ego guy. Like you could feel that you want others to win. Aside you. Yeah. And I really appreciate that.
Well, before we let you go, give everybody a chance to know how they can get in touch with you, reach out with you, find your stuff, whether it's social media, emails, whatever it is.
Yeah. The best way to reach out to me is just hit me up on Instagram at Nate R. Griffin. And that's my handle, or my business page, Exco Builds. And, you know, I'd love to talk to anybody that has any questions or is trying to grow the business and things like that.
Well, thank you for your time. I'll be following.
Yeah, Nate, this has been great, dude. I'll be following. Appreciate it.
Happy Thanksgiving. Happy Thanksgiving.
You guys too. Enjoy some time off, not in the field doing construction and not selling. Just
first Thanksgiving with the baby too,
first
man.
First Thanksgiving with my little girl.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Congratulations. Enjoy.
Did having a little girl straight change you as a man? Are you now soft as puppy shit?
Oh yeah.
That's It melts you as a man. It melts you having a little girl. Yeah, it's different.
Everybody said that, and I was like, "Nah, it won't happen." And then getting closer and closer, I was like, "It's gonna happen." And then when she was born, I'm like, "Yep, this girl has a different piece of my heart."
Congratulations! Yes, enjoy.
All right, brother, we appreciate it. Yeah, stay safe out there. Happy holidays.
Thank you. Happy holidays.
Thanks, Nate. Have a great one.
Hey, thanks for listening. If you had a good time, be sure to hit that subscribe button to get all the latest episodes. And if you had a really good time, leave a review to let us know what you thought. Until then, go gather some crazy stories on your job sites, and we'll see you next time on So, You Wanna Be a Contractor.